it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, Julie, from Porterville, I believe. So let's please offer a warm Valley Group welcome.
I'm Julie. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Bill for asking me to come speak tonight. Has anybody got a phone? I'm going to call him. No, I'm kidding. He's not here. And I appreciate him asking me. I've done this maybe once before. And I was telling my friend today, I texted him and I said, you know, I got like three choices. Let's see, a mammogram, an annual physical, or speaking. I'm trying to decide which one I like the best. And I'm like, okay, I'm just kidding. And I don't really like speaking. I don't really like that other shit either. But I do it just because, you know, somebody asked me to. So my sobriety date is May 15th, 1989. And I sobered up in Porterville. Springville, Porterville. I was 26 years old when I came to AA. And, you know, I was looking at that little, there's like a really scary little face guy over there in the middle. I think, oh, I'm going to stare at that little face all night because it's just cool and scary. Then I don't have to look at any of you guys. No, I'm kidding. But, I'm from Porterville. I grew up in Porterville. I was born and raised there, and I'm 54 years old. I hate it when people give the dates, you know, like, oh, I was born, and then I've been this long sober, and then I have to sit there and go, oh, shit, how old are they? You know, what's the deal? Not that it really matters, but so I sobered up when I was 26, and I was pretty much just done having fun. I think I had all the fun that I could have, and I grew up out in the country. My dad was a farmer, and I grew up outside of Poplar, like about 5 miles outside of Poplar, and lived in this little house in a walnut orchard, and, you know, that's what we did. My mom and dad had this walnut dehydrator thing, and, you know, we did the walnut thing. So I loved it. I loved living out there. I went to Little Pleasant View School. I graduated from eighth grade, like 30 kids in my class. You know, I loved all that little town stuff way out in the country, and went to high school, and first time I got drunk, I was 16 years old. I was in Mexico with my parents on a vacation. A bunch of people were drinking that were older than me. First time I drank, I got drunk, and every time after that. And I loved it, loved it, loved it. I did pretty good in school until I started drinking. My sophomore year, I drank before school, I drank during school, I drank after school, I drank on the weekends. You know, and I know a lot of people, there's a big drug thing, you know, oh my gosh. I loved just about everything, but back then, you know, you're talking in the 80s. So people smoked pot, people did, you know, whites or pink hearts and stuff like that. But really, it wasn't a big drug thing when I went to school. So mostly it was drinking, and we drank tequila. When I went to Menanche High School, there was a huge orchard across the street. Now it's just all houses, but we'd go across the street and drink before school, come to school. So we're drinking. I'll never forget, I brought this big old tub, mixed tequila sunrises. I go, well, it's going to be the sunrise. We have to have tequila sunrises before we go to class, and just crazy. I mean, who does that kind of stuff? You know, I don't know. But I loved it. I loved to party. I loved all of that went with it. My dad worked out of town a lot, so my mom would go visit him. So weekends, it was me. My sister got married, split. I was like, oh, right, this is awesome. And I lived way out in the country, so people would come out there, have parties. It was great. And I loved it. And never really got in trouble. But, you know, it was different then. I got pulled over a couple times. I never got arrested. And it was just different. You know, not like it is today. And So I graduated from high school, barely, got a 1.9 grade average. I was really trying hard. No, I really wasn't trying hard at all. I was ditching all the time. I was drunk a lot. So graduation night, you know, I'm in love with Frank Gooden. Oh, he was so cute. And he was younger than me. So we go to this party at his house, and I'm drunk. So took a handful of pills. We were drinking kamikazes on the stage at school, at, you know, the graduation, and then whatever else after that. Get to his house. I'm outside laying on the sidewalk, throwing up in the flower bed, and I'm thinking, he's going to really like me now. You know, yeah, that was wonderful. So, you know, you just think you're having so much fun, and really you look ridiculous. So everybody would ask me, what are you going to do after high school? What are you going to do? What are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do? I'm like, go to a party? I don't know. I really didn't get the question. You know, like, I think they met with your whole life, not what are you going to do tonight. So I really didn't have an answer because I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do. One of my friends was moving to Santa Barbara. She got accepted to the UCSB. So I'm like, okay, I'll go with her. So we moved to Santa Barbara, two friends and myself, and I loved it. We got this little cockroach-infested apartment, and it was great. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm not kidding about the cockroaches at all, but it was great. And, you know, I didn't do anything. I was supposed to, okay, I'm going to go to the city college. Well, across the street from the city college is the beach. So I'm thinking, beach, city college, beach, no. So I just went to the beach, and I didn't do anything. Ended up coming back to Porterville. And pretty much moved one other time down to Anaheim, came back, been in Porterville my whole life. And, you know, I'd love to tell you I have this big exciting story and all these crazy things happened to me. And, well, a lot of crazy things happened, but nothing to write a book about or anything like that. So I don't have one of those badass stories. I just don't. And, you know, it used to really bother me. I think, well, I don't have a story like so-and-so or so-and-so. And somebody said, well, you could go out and make a new story. And I'm like, no, I'm okay. I'll just deal with my boring-ass story. So I moved back to Porterville, just started working. I got a job in a packing house. That's what I do now. I work at a packing house in Porterville. I work in the sales office. And I have been doing that for like 33 years. And I just fell into this job. And I was an orange grader at this packing house. And then I just got different jobs in different offices and started working in sales and just drinking the whole time. And all my friends were getting married, having kids. You get the cute little house, a cute little, oh, you go visit them, then the cute little baby. And it's like, boring. No offense, that baby is adorable. But back then, you know, I was like, oh, hell no. I don't want no kids. I am never getting married. No kids. Boring. And I didn't. You know, I didn't get married until I was 31 years old. But I would, I just love the bars. I was a bar drinker. I love the bars. I love the parties. If it wasn't at my house, we'd take it somewhere else. A lot of bar drinking, and I loved it. And my behavior was not the best. I was not, well, you know, like I said, I never got married until I was 31, so I always felt like I'm not doing anything wrong. I mean, they were married. I wasn't. It wasn't my fault. So that's kind of how I looked at all that, which, you know, when you start taking your inventory in AA, it's a little bit different. But I didn't care. I didn't care if you were married. I didn't care if you had kids. I didn't care about anything. All I just cared about was me and what I wanted. And, you know, it wasn't a good deal. So mostly the end of my drinking was he's my husband now. I met my boyfriend then, Steve. And I started dating him. He had a group of friends that just partied like crazy, and that's what we did. It's probably the last year or two of my drinking was with these people, and I loved it and till the end. And I would get in my car. They had a lot of Monday night football parties, and we'd go to somebody's house and somebody else's house, and I'm just drunk every time, and I get in my car and bawl all the way home, and I don't know what the hell is wrong with me, and I can't stop, you know, and I'm just miserable. And other people seem to be having fun, and me, I'm like, this is not fun. It just wasn't fun anymore. And I'd go from bar to bar, house to house, whatever, wherever I was, I didn't want to be there. Whoever I was with, I didn't want to be with them. Whatever I was doing, I didn't want to be doing it. It was just, I always wanted something else. I think they call that restless, irritable, and discontent. And I used to, this is my big plan. When everybody said, what are you going to do with your life? My big plan was marry the rich old guy that's about ready to die. And that's what I wanted. I'm not kidding. I really wanted that. And I just figured, I'm not going to work for this money. I'll take yours or you're going to die pretty soon. And I never did do that. But I really, that was my plan. And it just didn't work out. So, but you know, I always went to work. I always had a job. I always went to work. And I don't know how I kept all that together, but I would come to work just hungover like crazy, and my boss would just be looking at me like, holy shit. Dated the drug dealer at work, so I'd have to snort a little coke in the bathroom and get through the day. And dated, you know, that always sounds really nice. So, you know, that's what I did. And I don't know how I kept jobs. I really don't. I really don't. And I stole money. Actually, this one always really gets me because the place I work right now, I stole from them. And I went and made amends. I wasn't working there anymore, and I went and made amends to them and told them that I stole money and they didn't want to take it. And I said, you have to take it. I said, this is what we do in AA. I have to make amends, blah, blah, blah. Give them the money. And so that's where I work now. Go figure. And I was working at a place way out in Woodlake at this packing house. And this girl, so I work on sales and I'm on the phone. We were talking about that tonight, retail. Is that how could I work in retail? I'd probably kill somebody or they would kill me. I just have a big mouth. And so I work in sales on the phone. So you just, you know, you can talk and hang up and talk and hang up. Well, this one time I didn't hang up before I told this girl that F off and kiss my rear end and blah, blah, blah. And I hung up and I'm looking, there's like four or five other salespeople standing there and they're just all looking at me like, I go, what? She was being a bitch. And so, I mean, I thought she deserved it, but they didn't think so. And so I got laid off with no pay for 2 weeks. So in that time, I got another job. Somebody actually called me and offered me another job at a better position. I'm like, okay. So anyway, I ended up at the place now where I work, and you know, they called me and asked me. I got let go from another place. They closed the business and got rid of everybody. And they, you know, this place called and asked me to come work for them. And it's like, me? And, you know, it's pretty cool. It's a privilege. And I'm glad I'm saying that because I've been off work for 3 months and I'm like getting stressed out about going back. It's slow in the summertime. So I just said, lay me off. I'll get unemployment. And I'm thinking, I don't want to go back to work. But see how grateful I am for this job that I stole from. And they actually put up with my shit. So I better be damn grateful that I got a job, right? But you know, I just, so your story is supposed to be what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. What happened was I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. Like I said, I never went to jail, never got arrested. I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. So a lot of things that happened to people didn't happen to me because, well, and plus I was 26 years old. So I think if I just kept on going, all that stuff would have happened, no problem. So I start going to a group therapy, a lot of people in the group were alcoholics and addicts, and they would talk about that, and I was thinking, why the hell would you tell people you're an alcoholic or an addict, or I didn't get all that, you know, but they would talk about that a lot. And I went to a meeting with the guy in the group. He went to the Exeter meeting. I think it was the 2:30 Exeter meeting, and we went, and people are smoking, which I didn't like. No offense to anybody, but I just was never a smoker. The only thing I never picked up was smoking. Of course, I never minded the bar smoke, but then you come to AA and you're like, oh my God. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, so I go to this meeting with this guy and everybody's laughing and having fun and it just really pissed me off. I was like, what the hell is so funny? There's nothing funny about my life going on right now at all. I don't like anybody. I don't like myself. I can't, I don't know what's wrong with me. And people are laughing. I'm thinking, what's wrong with you? And I didn't really like it. But I started going to meetings. I went to a candlelight meeting in Tulare. And I met David Looper there. David was one of the first people that ever spoke to me. And I will never forget that. And he was so kind and a wonderful man. You know, I wouldn't use his last name unless he just passed away last year. But or it's been 2 years. I don't know. But and I like that candlelight meeting because you could sit in the back and people don't talk to you. And nobody looks at you because you can't see you because it's freaking dark in there. So then you're just sitting in the back. And I'm like, this is cool. I can do this. And then a guy at that meeting said, why don't you go to the Springville meeting? There's a meeting in Springville. I think, okay. So I get up there. There's like 10 times more fluorescent lights than this. Fluorescent lights, they have a microphone up at the front. And they want you, if you're going to speak, you got to go up and sit in the microphone. I'm thinking, oh, heck no, I'm never doing that. And which that's pretty much my home group now. But so I did do it. But I just started going to meetings. I didn't think I was an alcoholic. The people in that group told me, you probably should go to AA. Like, why? I really just didn't get it. I didn't realize that all my problems were centered around drinking. And I just didn't realize that. So I started going to AA meetings. And I liked it. I liked that that there was a lot of people. I was a party girl. I love the parties. I love the bars. So that there was a lot of people there, that was cool. You know, the ones coming up wanting to hug you and stuff, I wasn't really all into that. I was like, no, I don't know you. Not that that ever made a difference before. But, you know, I didn't know them. I didn't want them hugging me, no AA meeting. So I was like, no. And so it was weird, you know, but I kept going. And I bought a big book. I'll never forget. I told my friend, John, I call him up. I bought a big book. I didn't read it for like 6 months, but, you know, I had it. And for anybody that's intimidated by this stuff, I mean, I'm sure a lot, you know, they give a lot of books away. And I just want to say this. This group is awesome. You guys put on the Soberfest. It's this group, right? I thought it was this group. They told me it was. The Valley Group. It's not the same? Okay, forget it. I'm not giving you no credit at all. No. Well, anyway, the people who put on the Soberfest did a wonderful job. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate all the newcomers that were helping, and that was wonderful. But I used to think these books cost like $25, and they really don't. You know, they're really cheap. But so I never bought one. So when I finally bought a book, and then I didn't really read it. And I asked a lady to be my sponsor, Cheryl. But she was really busy. She was going to school. She was working. She was, and I'm like, she doesn't have time for me. So I got another sponsor, and I got another sponsor. But the point was, since I've come to AA, I haven't drank. I was done. Whatever my bottom was, that was it for me. I was done. Bye. And so after that, so I got the book, I got a sponsor, I started doing the steps and going to meetings. The meetings part was easy for me because I love the people and I love the meetings. But doing the steps, I wasn't really all into that, you know. So I wasn't sure I was alcoholic, but I got the second part of the first step. We admit we're powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. I knew my life was unmanageable. I wasn't so sure about the alcoholic part. The only alcoholic I knew was my parents' friend. He went to Raleigh Hills, and he passed out in our living room, you know, in between the couch and the coffee table. I'm like, okay, that guy's alcoholic. But I didn't really know. I didn't know what alcoholic was. I didn't know what they looked like. You know, I don't know. And so I just kept coming, and sometimes I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, and you know, reason, that's okay, or I just would sit there and listen. And so one night I just started telling my story, and it's like, the stuff you do and the things is just not like what other people do. And I always say, if you think, you don't really think your story's that bad, you just start telling somebody that's not a drinker your story, and they start going, you know, they get that deer in the headlights, and you just go, oh, crap, and you just shut up and go on to the next conversation. But because, you know, most people just don't do all that stuff, and they just don't. So I'm glad I figured out that's what was wrong with me. I went to a lot of seminars in the 80s, okay, and you guys are, like, younger in the back. they had all these, you know, seminars, how to have a relationship, how to do this, how to do that. Oh my God. And I went to this thing in Three Rivers one time, is you're going to eat all this good food and beet juice and all this. I could not get out of the hell out of there fast enough, go to the liquor store. I'm like, are you serious? Oh my God. So yeah, all the beet juice and all that shit isn't really didn't help me at all. So, but, you know, that I finally admitted I was alcoholic. It's like, okay, this is your problem and do something about it. And, you know, I don't have the story of coming in and out of AA. I came in here and I have never been in a recovery home. I'm grateful there are places for people to go. That's a safe place to be. You know, I've had a lot of the ladies from the Par Center in Porterville ask me to sponsor them, and I just say, you're in a safe place, do what they tell you to do. And when you get out, you know, we'll work the steps and we'll do whatever you want. And, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good, safe place to be. And so I'm living with my mom, 26, you know, living with my mom. I was very successful. And I just did the AA thing and meetings and I got really involved, really, really, really involved. And I'm so glad I had a group of people that, hey, come to this meeting with me or go to central office with me and do this. And, you know, you just show up there, you're going to get the job. You didn't even have to, like, send a resume or any kind of that shit. You just show up and you're breathing and you're standing up, you got the job. And so, you know, oh, you could be on the board. Oh, you could do this. Oh. You can talk and stand up. We're going to do this. And so, so that's kind of what happened. I got really involved in central office and I really appreciate that. I've met a lot of people, cause I don't come over here for meetings very often. So you get the Porterville, Springville, you don't really get to meet other people, but when you get involved in other things like that, you get to do a lot of things. And, Mike, I remember one of the first GSR, it was some kind of GSR something going on, and you were there, and Carolyn, and I went and helped with the food. I mean, you're talking, you know, 26, 27 years ago, and I just been showing up ever since. And, you know, if you're not sure you're an alcoholic, I think it's just nobody can tell you that. I had people tell me at one of my jobs, I come back from my lunch, I'm drunk, they kind of did a little intervention on me, this girl and somebody else, and I think you have a drinking problem. I'm like, really? I think you have a nosiness problem. No, I just said, you know, I'm okay. And I drank, so I was drinking at my lunch hour, doing drugs with the, you know, my boyfriend at work, and but I'm fine. You know, I'm fine. I don't need your help. I don't need you to care about me. Get away from me. And I really have never ever seen that girl ever again. And I drank for 5 more years after that. So, honestly, somebody telling me that I have a problem, I'm sorry. I don't want to hear that you think I have a problem. Or this is the one that used to piss me off. People would go, oh, we're praying for you. I'm like, thank you. I'm so fucked up. You have to pray for me. Really? Thank you very much. I appreciate it. No, I didn't like that. And but, you know, I know they mean well. They really do. It's just coming to somewhere like Alcoholics Anonymous, you get to talk to people that are just like you. And I think that's the cool part for me. I didn't have to go to church. I didn't have to try to fit into somewhere I didn't feel that I fit in. My family, we weren't churchgoers. My parents would drop me off and we'd play the little games and eat the cookies and go home. You know, I didn't learn anything about God or not, I don't know what the heck. And, you know, and that's the cool part about coming here is that, you know, we just accept whoever, you know, come in the door, sit down, and hopefully you'll figure out this is where you need to be. And if it isn't where you need to be, guess what? There's about 25 other 12-step programs you could go to. I mean, there's everything, and which is wonderful how complimentary that is to Alcoholics Anonymous, that there's so many, you know, NA and CA and whatever all that other crap is, OA and Gamblers Anonymous, and I mean, whatever your problem is, they got a 12-step to help you. And that's great. I think it's great. But I was going to meetings in the beginning, and I'd say, well, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm an addict, and I'm an overeater, and I'm a workaholic. And you know, this guy came up to me after the meeting, and he said, Julie, he goes, are you an alcoholic? And I said, yeah. He goes, well, why don't you just work on that? I go, oh. oh, okay. And that's kind of what I did. You know, I went to NA meetings and AA meetings, but honestly, I quit the drugs on my own. They were kicking my ass, and I could not quit drinking on my own. And so I consider myself alcoholic, and that's why I come to AA meetings. And there's a lot of other, because I talked about that other too, but it's real important for me to figure out what's my problem and then go where I need to fix that problem. You know, I'm not going to go to the dentist, you know, if I have, you know, a brain tumor. I don't think he's going to be able to help me. So I need to go where someone can help me with that problem that I have. And it's so great that there's so many meetings. And so, you know, the first probably 20 years of my sobriety, I was nothing but balls out AA. That's all I did. That's all the time. In this meantime, so like I said, I was never getting married. Well, I did do that, but I did not have any kids. My husband, I'm a stepmom, so I have a 38-year-old stepson. Holy shit. My husband's 10 years older than me. So it's his fault, but I never did have any kids, and that's okay. You know, that's fine. But, where's I going with all that conversation? I have no idea. But, so I got married. I live in Porterville. I've been at the same job for like 13 years, something like that. I bought a house. My husband and I bought a house together. And, it's like I turned into the person that I couldn't stand. All of those people. The little house and the little fence and the, but you know, I'm one of those people. And like today, I worked my butt off in the yard today. I'm like, God dang it. But you know what? Those things are fun today. Instead of, okay, let's go out and whoever we're going to party with and whatever, whoever we're going to wake up with, wherever we're going to wake up, whatever's going to happen, I don't know. I don't know any of that stuff that's going on. I don't have to do any of that stuff today. And we're having a New Year's celebration coming up, you guys, and it's really so much fun. So let's backtrack to Labor Day. Okay, we're backtracking now on the holiday. So I'm sober like a year or so, and I'm telling my sponsor, I don't have any pictures of me sober. Every picture I have of myself, I'm drunk. And I said, she goes, Julie, why don't you take some new pictures? I go, wow, she's so smart. Oh, wow, she's a smart. So I was like, okay. So, and then, like, the party thing. I'm like, how do you have a party without drinking? I mean, what the hell are you going to do at a party if you're not drinking? There's really nothing to do. So I had a party, Labor Day party at my house. So people come. Of course, nobody's drinking. And we cook all this food, and then everybody leaves. And a couple weeks later, of course, I'm living with my mom. So my mom comes in the kitchen, and she's like, what is that smell? And she opens up the oven, and there's chicken in there that had been cooked from the barbecue, like Labor Day 3 or 4 weeks ago. Nobody really cooked much at my house. So the hair on that chicken was about this long. It was like, oh my God. And so, you know, so I make jokes about that all the time because it's like my first sober party, you know, the biggest thing that happened was a hairy chicken. That's not too bad. So, somebody stuck it in there, you know, I forgot it was in there. So, but you can have sober parties. You can, like, be with the same person for 2 years. And, you know, so anyway, I got married, and my husband is sober. We partied together. I told him I can't do this anymore. I'm done. I didn't tell him to quit drinking. I said, you do whatever you want. And so he quit drinking also. Doesn't really attend AA. We did it at the beginning. He doesn't really. I'm like, you know what? That's your deal. It's not my problem. So he's sober the same amount of time as me. So, you know, it's a pretty good life. The boring life is not too bad. Because all that excitement we think we're having and so much fun and it's all so wonderful, guess what? It's really not so wonderful. And when I wake up feeling like crap every single day, you know, it's not so wonderful. And I'm not going to say that sobriety every single day is like a 10. You know, there's some days it's like, it's kind of down here, and I go, okay, I can bring it up. And And not every day is the most perfect day. Probably the last couple of years of my sobriety have been about the hardest of the whole time I've been sober. And just some situations happened in my life and weird things, and I've just been in a weird space for a while. But the most important thing for me is I kept coming to meetings. I kept talking to people. I've had two sponsors pass away in the last 4 or 5 years. And you know, they always say, men work with men, women work with women, that kind of thing. I used to say that all the time. I don't say that anymore. The last two sponsors I had were men, and they worked for me. You know, they were two of the greatest guys I've ever met in my life and helped me through so much stuff. And I think the most important thing is not if it's a man or a woman, but, you know, what are my intentions or whatever, you know. If I think that guy's pretty hot back there in row number 4, I probably shouldn't be asking him to be my sponsor. You know, that's probably not a good idea. So I think it's like, it's kind of like, what are my intentions, you know. And I've had some of the most wonderful men in AA help me through all kinds of stuff, because they just care about people being sober and they want to help them, you know, and that's very important. But and I have to admit, I really don't have a sponsor right now. And so Tom McDonald was, I used him as a sponsor the last couple of years of his life. I love that guy. So Tom, you know, was sober in Springville, moved over here to Visalia for years, came back to Springville, and, you know, I understand that he used to piss a lot of people off and say crazy things in meetings, but I love him. I love that guy. And we started talking. He's talking to me on Facebook. He goes, somebody named Tiny Lopez, like, sends me a message on Facebook. I'm like, is there a meeting here tonight, blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, oh, this is like an AA person. So I, yeah, there's a meeting at the 7 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. Then he's like, then I find out it's Tom. I don't know why he had his name on Facebook as Tiny Lopez, but anyway. So then I find out who he is, and I'm like, oh, you jackass. So I start talking to him. We start emailing, talking. I get him, you know, his couple really good friends of his passed away. You know, John Cody died, and then his neighbor died. Gary, he was friends with since high school, and like back to back. So we just started talking, and we became really good friends. And he hated the word sponsor. He goes, why do you need a sponsor? 25 years over, you just need friends, people to talk to. I'm like, okay. I think he just didn't like the label of sponsor. And so he was my friend, you know, and we talked all the time. And he got cancer, and he died. But I was so glad. He was so afraid that he was going to, he wasn't afraid to die, but he just didn't want to be really sick and have people take care of him. And my friend Doug went to go pick him up to take him to the doctor, and he was dead. You know, he just had a great weekend, wasn't feeling good Sunday, and passed away Sunday night. And it was like, what a blessing, you know, I mean, that he didn't have to suffer like that. And it was so wonderful that, I mean, if you're going to get that's the way it happened for him. But I'm so grateful for every person that's taken any time to spend with me, because it's a privilege. You know, there's people in here, if you just ask them, they'll do anything for you. They'll take you to meetings. They'll, you know, talk to you. Tom would talk to me outside the meeting for an hour. Well, 2 hours, 3 hours. No, yeah, he likes to talk. So, but, you know, I appreciate that. And I try to do that with people today. I'm not the same kind of sponsor I used to be. I would tell women, get this shit. I would say, oh, if you don't go to women's meeting, you're just really not serious about AA. And I'm going, serious? I haven't been in women's meeting in probably 5 years, so I guess I'm not serious. But, you know, stupid crap like that. You repeat the stuff you hear other people say. I mean, that's what I did for years, and I just don't do that anymore. You know, I have girls that call me their sponsor. I haven't talked to them in a year or two. I just let them do what they got to do. You know, it makes my life easier. It's just, everybody has to do what they have to do. For me, I have to go to meetings. I don't have to call somebody my sponsor, but I talk to a lot of people that I really love and respect. And I do writing. I've been doing that a lot lately. And my new thing is prayer and meditation. I'm feeling like that's something I'm lacking in my sobriety. And I'm a very hyper type A personality, go, 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 do, do, do. I never sit for 5 minutes. And so I'm calming it down. This is my year of like, take a deep breath, can't smoke the pot, calm down. You just have to do it by yourself. Figure it out, do the breathing thing and all that stuff. So, but I always thought the meditation was reading those little meditation books. Oh, I read the 24-hour book, and I read this, and I read this, but I'm hauling ass reading them because I got to get up and I got to go do something else. So I think the point is, like, to, you know, so I've been sitting. My friend JC is giving me some tips on how to, you know, maybe do some meditation. I'm like, awesome. And so I'm trying that. You know, something new I'm doing. And, you know, I'm just going to try it. I'm not real good at it because it's hard to sit still for even 5 minutes and not think about. When you guys do that minute thing here, oh, my God. I'm like, hurry up. I'm getting nervous. And no. But it's hard to just sit. You know, it's hard to sit and be quiet and not have to be doing something every 5 minutes. So anyway, I'm all over the place. I think that weird guy, the picture frame guy, is getting tired of hearing my shit. So I'm going to be quiet, and I want to thank you guys, and have a nice evening.